Okay, I'll speak with the blackboard. So, excuse me?
This thing is not
nice. I'll speak loud. Stop me if I don't, okay? So I'm going to speak about a recent result of Bill Johnson and myself. But before I get to the result, I want to give some selected history. So let me start with the definition. There is something about one norm space for me is just some Rn with some norm on it, and there is another one which is Rm with some other norm on it. I'm thinking about M as being larger than N. And so I say that Xk embeds into Y if there is a, well, some subspace of Y. This is a subspace, not just a subset. And the linear operator from X to invertible linear operator from X to Y, such that the norm of T times the norm of T inverse is smaller or equal than K. Okay, geometrically it means just that if you look at the ball of Y, then T of the ball of X is contains the ball of Y, say, or, well, it can be chosen, T can be chosen such that it contains the ball of Y, it's containing Y. So the ball of Y is a section, namely the ball of Y prime, for which you have this thing. I think we've seen this in previous lectures. So this is K embedding, and I'll be very much interested in the exact value of K and relation with N and M and things like that. In very particular cases. Okay, so the first, I'll start the history. Many talks here started with Dvoretsky theorem. Dvoretsky theorem says that, the way Dvoretsky proved it is, this is, I think, 60 or around 1960. He proved that L2K embeds into, maybe I'll use the letter Y. So he proved that for every epsilon larger than zero, L2K, this is just a Euclidean k-dimensional space, embeds into, with constant 1 plus epsilon, into Y whenever the specific function, but not the best. Okay. Let me change this to N. This will be my. Okay? I want to. Okay. This was at the time it was a very. Only a few people really understood the proof. There were, during the next 10 years, there were several simplifications of the proofs. And in particular, there is a proof by Milman that everybody is talking about. I'll write approximately 70, I think it's 69 actually, in which it proves that, and actually it's the same result except that there is a good estimate on the dimension. It's some function of epsilon times N.
Less than or equal
to. No, whenever the dimension of Y is larger than Z, then L2N embeds in Z. You should think about this. every time that I lecture about this, there are questions like this. You should think about this as equal. Okay, if the dimension of y is equal to z, then it embeds. Well, okay, this is a way to really to think about it. And this is the best, it's easy to see that this is the best dependent on n. Let me just say that the dependence on epsilon is not known until now. The best result is of Gordon. But it's probably not the right one. I will not enter into this. This is not... But more than just this result, this method of Milman gives a lot of information also for particular spaces, and actually the general thing was stated here in the talk of Giannopoulos, but I'm not so much interested in the general thing. I'll give some examples. I'll be interested in n into the little lp spaces. So let me just say what the little lp space, or the norm is on Rm, the sequence ai, is just the sum of ai to the p1 over p, and when I say lpm, I just mean m with that norm, okay? I'm talking over the reals, even though I think that everything works over the complex, I'm not sure. So from that method, it follows, and this is very well exposed in a paper of Figel, Lindenschultz, and Milman from 76, that n embeds in LPM whenever m is, again, think about it as equal. Okay, I'll write equal, or larger or equal. Then some, so there is a different behavior for p between 1 and 2, and for p larger than 2. So here it is, just n, except for a function of epsilon, which again is, I don't think is really known, but is the best thing. And here it's a function of epsilon and p times n to the p over 2. Okay, and again, this is and it's known also that this is the best, this is best possible. This is a result of which was actually is earlier than this paper, but. Okay, also the dependence on p here is known, but again, the dependence on epsilon is not known. These are just side remarks. okay, now, the proofs, I didn't say anything about the proof, but the proof is using concentration, and as such, there is always a problem with such proofs. They work very well for small epsilon, but they don't give any better result for large epsilon. I'll be really interested here in large epsilon, what happened with large epsilon, mostly in kind of this result, well, not exactly that, but results about LP spaces, but embedding of LP spaces for large epsilon. So the proofs are, I'm not going to do anything about the proof, but at some place you evaluate some norm of some random variable, and you show that the probability that this is larger than epsilon times the expectation, that this probability is very, very small. And because of that, you can find X, which, or actually many X's, whatever they are, for which this is larger or equal than 1 minus epsilon times this expectation, I'll just write E, and smaller or equal than 1 plus epsilon times this expectation. With upper bound, there is no problem, but with the lower bound, of course, there is a problem when epsilon is larger than 1. I mean, you know that this is positive, so this doesn't give you any information. So if you want to prove, you may want to prove, for instance, a result here with epsilon being 100, and of course, in that case, you want to get a better result than this. You want maybe to get 1.1 times n, allowing here to write a large constant. But you cannot do it using such results. You don't get, for large epsilon, you don't get any more information than for small epsilon. So, however, there is a... There is another method, which is not as general as this method of Milman, but which works in some cases, which also was mentioned in one of the previous talks, by Kashin, by the way, the same year, 76, which he proved, for instance, this deals only with that case, which actually this is the only thing I'll be interested in. So Kashin proves that, and it's actually quite easy, that for every A larger than 1, there is a K of A, such that L to N, K embeds into L, let me say, P of dimension AN. This is like in my title. Okay, so you can take any does not depend on N, and also not on P, this is not so important. P is here between 1 and 2. Yeah, it cannot happen for P larger than 2, it's a completely different formula. But the constant is actually independent of P, but it doesn't matter so much. And, okay, so just carry this in mind for a minute, and let me talk about a different branch of the history.
Between this and what we do there, it's the same
here. Theorem. It's the same theorem, except that here there is a very good embedding. The constant is small, almost as small as possible, but the dimension is a large multiple of n. Here, the dimension is a small multiple of n, and of course you must pay somewhere, you pay by the constant.
And
right. Okay, so I'm topic of my talk really is about such, more than that I'm thinking about the method. I mean, this is exactly where concentration cannot work. I mean, this is so the method of Kashin is using volume. Okay, so now let me talk for a minute about another branch of the history. So all these theorems here involve Euclidean space somewhere, L2 somewhere. I want to speak about non-Euclidean results. And the first that was proved, which does not involve Hilbert spaces in this direction, is a result of Johnson and myself in 81. And we prove the following. So maybe you should look here. Let's fix some. So in particular, L2N embeds into L1M. Okay, just I'm taking P equals 1 with constant 2, say, or constant 1 plus epsilon. And what we're interested in is what other large subspaces of L1M there are. M is proportional to N here. What other proportional subspaces of L1M there are? There are some natural candidates, these are the LP spaces for some reason, and we prove that this is true. So we prove that for every P, I prefer to call it Q now, between 1 and 2, and for every epsilon larger than 0, LQN, 1 plus epsilon embedded into L1M, result, but does not involve Euclidean spaces anymore. There is something strange about all these things. This again uses some random method and so on. So you actually fix Q, you prove that most of the subspaces of L1M of the dimension are LQN. And this is true for every. For every Q, you prove that most of the subspaces are LQN. Looks like, doesn't sound very correct, but the notion of most is different from one Q to the other. So these are not with some natural measures. Here it's, of course, you do it with a natural measure on the Grassmannian or something. There it's a kind of measure which is built up for this purpose. However, again, it's using some kind of concentration inequalities and Again, it works for small epsilons, but doesn't give any better result for large epsilons. There was a sequence of papers about such things, and there is one result that I want, the next thing in the history that I want to mention, is the result of Bourguin, Lindeschloss, and Milman. In which they extended this to, well, I should say maybe it follows from what I wrote here, but it was not before, that LQN embeds this constant 1 even in capital L1. Capital L1 is kind of the infinite analog of little L1. Okay? So that these are a good candidate for that. But they proved something like in which you can replace this LQNs by a general subspace of L1. Not quite, but the following, so let me state it exactly. For every P smaller than Q, smaller than 2, you can include 2 if you want, but this case was known before. And for every epsilon larger than 0, if X, let me write Xn, by that I mean just an n-dimensional space. Okay, this is denotes the dimension. If Xn is a subspace of LQ, then Xn 1 plus epsilon embeds into L1 M, so M, which is a function now of epsilon P. In LPM. Thank you. So first of all, I extended it equal 1 to every P. It was not a big extension. Something like in the paper of Johnson and myself. But the main thing is that it's for a general, not completely a general subspace, but only subspace which embed into some larger LQ space. There is also some theorem about a general P. I will not speak about it. Maybe I'll mention something at the end. It's weaker. There are some log terms and things like that. Let's leave it for the time being. So, okay. And again, this is a random method, a different random method. Maybe let me say something about this random method. And again, using concentration inequalities. The random model here is very simple. Do you first embed Xn into some huge LP, let me call it M, capital M, some you don't need any control over the M, this is some kind of approximation. This is, and then you select coordinates out of this M coordinates randomly, and you show that this restriction is a good isomorphism. The way, again, there is some problem with what measure you use. It's not the uniform measure on this. It's a measure which is adapted to this subspace. But a random selection of coordinates. And again, as I said, again, it's using concentration inequalities, and so again, it doesn't give better results for large epsilon. And so the question whether you can prove a similar result to Cushing in that setting or in the setting of Johnson and myself, okay? Whether you can prove a kind of a Cushing result. Improve the M here to A times N for any A larger than 1 and pay only by a constant here depending on A and maybe P and Q. And this is something that bothered me for quite a while, since 81, for return to it several times, and I think some other people, and now we solve it in actually a very simple way, as you will see. But before that, let me... So there was really no progress on that, except for one paper by Naor and Zvavich. This is 88, or some 89. In 1998, you weren't born yet. So, which they proved that This is only deal with the case P and 1. They prove that that LPN embeds in L1AN, but with a constant depending also on, weakly also on, depending on A, of course, and on P, but unfortunately also on N, but only in a weak way only. So it's something like KAPN was some other constant depending on A and P. It was log n to the power of, so there was some log factor, log n to the power and some constant depending on A and P. Write Q here to be consistent with my previous notation. This is Q. Okay, so, but this was the only result in this direction. And now we, So what I want to state is the theorem of Johnson and myself. So let me state it. So this works in the general case, any p larger or equal than 1, smaller than q, smaller or equal than 2, and take any a larger than 1, then then and Xn is any subspace of LQ. So then, for all subspace of LQ, any such subspace embeds with constant depending only on AP and Q into little LP of dimension An. Okay, so the same kind of theorem is Cushing in this setting. Okay, before I forget anything from the history. Okay, before I say something about the proof of that, I'll prove it. It's very simple, as you will see. Let me just say one geometric. For p equals 1, the spaces which embeds into L1, capital L1, or whatever, maybe let me say it only for a very particular case. So I'll only speak. Look for a minute about this theorem. Yeah? LQ embeds into LQN embeds into L1 alpha n with a constant depending only on A and Q. So the dual version of that says that if you look at the ball of LQN prime, then if you interpret it right, then it says that you can approximate this by a sum of segments by something like that, I going from there is some constant here. So you can find some segments in Rn, this IIs are segments centered at zero in Rn. And you can approximate the ball you should think first about the case where Q is equal to 1, namely Q infinity. This is just L infinity, which is this is just a Q, which is the sum of exactly n segments. What this says is that for Q prime between 2 and infinity, you can have a similar approximation with very few segments, just 1.1 times n segments. Okay? Which is strange, I don't know. I think. Okay. Now, about the proof. Before I get to the proof, there is something very strange about the way people. So I wish somebody would do a research on how people find proofs or something. So this is a problem, as I say, that I thought about for 20 years on and off, of course. There were at least 5 or 6 times in which I thought about it seriously. I thought that I have an idea either in the positive direction or in the negative direction, and thought about it for a week or two or maybe even more. And I know that Bill Johnson, more or less the same, and I think that some other people also thought about it. When we decided now to think about it again, we got the solution in half a day or something like that. So, there's something very strange about it. I really don't completely understand. We just wrote down the simplest, this method of Bourgain-Lenoir's by sampling coordinates, and kind of we all have the feeling that you cannot do anything more by probabilistic methods, but we still just try to formulate for ourselves what do you need to prove in order that some choice of coordinates, not probabilistic, maybe will work. And we wrote it, and after we wrote it, it looked like kind of a known theorem, what the conditions that we wrote, and we dug a little bit in the literature, and it was a known theorem. And not a hard one either. I mean, it's a simple one. I think I managed maybe even to prove this theorem that we are using. So it was basically just a matter of writing what we need or something like that. I don't know. It took 2 years to do that. So the theorem we are using is, let me state it, it's also a simple theorem, which is, it's a theorem of Carle and Peugeot in the case that P is equal to 1 and there is an extension of it by Bourgain, Carlton, and Sofriri for P between 1 and 2. So the theorem says the following. We even have time to prove this, or maybe. So Carle and Peugeot is from 8. Say that I. And this thing is a little bit later, not much. Maybe 91, I'm not completely sure. The second one. It's not very easy to find, even in the paper of Peugeot, it appears at the end. A proof with a small remark or something like that. It's not stated exactly as I stated, but so the theorem is the following. You look at a quotient map from let Q be a quotient map from LPN M to a space F. I'll explain what a quotient map is in a minute. Quotient map, and assume that the dimension of F is larger or equal than some alpha times M. I'm thinking about alpha as M. So then there exists a subset of the coordinates such that if you look at sum of AI Q of EI, these are the EIs are just the unit vectors in RM. I'm sorry, I in sigma. Then the norm of that is this. Of course, is a smaller or equal Q is quotient map is of norm smaller or equal than one. So this is smaller or equal than sigma of AI to the P one over P. But it is the theorem says that it is larger or equal than some constant. I'll say something about the constant times sum of AI to the P1 over P, I in sigma, and the size of sigma is larger or equal than also the same constant, say, times M, and C is only a function of C alpha.
What's the lower bound or upper bound?
Upper bound is trivial.
No, on the size of sigma.
I want a lower bound. It looks strange a little bit, but I want a lower bound. Um, So a quotient map, just geometrically, it's you should think about it like that. You have two, you divide, you look at M, and you have two spaces, say F and E, set only at zero, and the span of which is all of Rm, and you put should be clear. So I can define it formally, but I think this is good enough. So let's assume this for a minute, and the theorem of Johnson and myself, which is extremely easy now. So I start really with the other theorem, with the Bourgain-Schultz-Millman theorem. So I have this X, N, I have this N, and first I embed it in 2. So Xn, you can embed it as constant 2 into some Lp. And here there is some large constant times m. Yeah, this is the Millman theorem. And let me say Xn bar is the image. T of Xn. Remember, to say that this embeds it also, this is this operator. I really want to think about an axis of Lp of C. And you look at the quotient map from Lp, the Cn. Let me call this M. Okay. M is just C times M. You look at this quotient map to Lpm over Xn bar, namely Xn plays a role of either. You look at the projection parallel to Xn bar. And so notice that the of this Lpm over Xn bar is just m minus n, which is proportional to m. So this is something like c times m, proportional to n, or proportional to m, it's the same. And I'm going to use this theorem. So there is a sigma. So there is such a sigma, and what I'm going to show is that the restriction to the complement of sigma is a good isomorphism. So I'm going to show that X. I'm going to show the following: that X restricted to the complement of sigma, the norm of that is larger or equal than some constant depending only on this C, it's actually C over 1 plus C, I'm not wrong, times the norm of X. And this is to understand it for all X in LPM, only for X in this Xn bar. Okay, for my subspace, this is the case. So we'll check this in a minute. But once you do that, you automatically now Xn into a smaller dimensional LPM. You know, put it into LPM of dimension the cardinality of sigma complement, which is M minus I call this alpha M, and then I have the C, if I want to follow the theorem. So it's M minus C M. Yeah, because the cardinality of the complement is smaller than that. Okay? And then an iter. And this is an isomorphism with constant 1 plus C over C, and I iterate it just finitely many times, and I get what I want. Okay, so I only have to check this. And this is... and this is very easy because, well, maybe I will not do the computation, just try. What do you do? Take an X of norm 1, say, in X n bar, and write it as is x restricted to sigma plus x, well, let me start with sigma. Larger than some absolute constant, something involved in C. Okay, so let's say that this is not the case. Let's say that this is, so assume this is very small. So this is in bounded away from zero. Because this is norm one. Now apply Q to that. So on the left hand side I get zero. Q of x is zero. Here I get Q of x restricted to s plus Q of, why did I write here prime? Plus Q of x restricted to sigma. Now Q is norm one, so if this was small, this is also small. And Q is an isomorphism when restricted to sigma. Yeah, this is a theorem. So if it was large, this is also large, or bounded away from zero. And this is a prediction, of course. You cannot have sum of two such things equal to zero. This is, you write it exactly. Okay, I see. I have some 7 minutes, like that, right? So let me prove this theorem. I'll only prove the Carle and Pajot theorem. So that you'll see that this is also not hard. So I'm proving the Carle and Pajot theorem. And this is a kind of a nice covering argument. So remember what is it? So P is one for me now. The quotient map, I need the, so we have this quotient map on Rn, and I need this, this is my F now, and this is, how do I call it, E, which is a kernel of, this is a kernel of Q. Okay? And, okay, and what I want to show really is, I said that this is simple, but it actually uses another theorem of John Elton, but also not a hard theorem. I want to show that the expectation of sum of epsilon I, so let me write average, average of sum of epsilon I Q of EI is large. Is larger equal than a constant times M. If this is the case, then there is a theorem, and then, so we'll prove this, and then apply the theorem of John Elton, not to be confused with Elton John, of that say that once you have that, then you can extract a percentage of the of these vectors, which are of norm smaller or equal than one, which satisfy this lower bound, okay? So I will not do that, but this is not a very hard theorem. It uses Stellach lemma. It's kind of a combinatorial theorem. Okay, so this is really what I want to prove, this average thing. And instead of that, I'll change it a little bit. Instead of using plus minus ones, I'll use variables which are uniformly distributed on the interval minus 1, 1. Of course, it doesn't change much there. So I'll really evaluate something like that, sum of psi I q of EI. Okay, where psi I are uniform zero, minus 1, 1 random variables, and they're independent. So this expectation is actually smaller than the other one, but certainly they are of the same, they are equivalent. Okay, the norm here, by the way, is in F. Okay? So now instead of is larger than the N, and And I'll show that this is bounded away from zero, and this of course is good enough in order to evaluate the expectation, but let me evaluate the opposite thing, so let me, this is really what I want to work on. Okay, I want to show that this is really small, rho depending only on alpha. Okay. So write it like that, this is P of sum of 1 over n psi I q of EI. Let me take the Q here. Smaller than rho. And what is written here? This is exactly the probability that this vector say psi 1 over n psi bar, well, that is written here, belongs to Q minus 1 of rho of B of F. This is really the meaning of that. You think? And what is this probability? That's a uniform, of course, this is just a uniform measure on the cube of size 2 over n. So this is just the volume of 1 over n times this cube intersection with this Q minus 1 of rho of BF and normalized by the volume of this cube. The volume of this cube is just 2 to the n over n factorial, n to the n. Okay? This is all, everything is simple here. So how do I evaluate this volume? Here is where entropy enters, where covering numbers enter. But in a very simple way. So what you do is, let me look at this picture. So what is, well, let me do one more step, which is actually looks a bit strange. I want to replace this. So this is this cube of size 2 over n. It is included in the L1 ball. This is why I divided by n, really. It's smaller or equal than the volume of the L. It's not n, it's m. I wrote n instead of m. It's not a problem, okay? Let me write m, and I'm cheating a little bit, but m and n are basically the same. Let me write n here. I made some mistakes there between n and m, but let me carry it on like that. So I'm going to write here the L1 n ball intersection Q minus 1 rho BF. Volume of Z times n to the n over 2 to the n. And how do you evaluate this? This volume, you look at so what is it, by the way? You have this. This is, say, rho of B of F, and this Q minus 1 of that is this strip here. And you intersect it with the L1 ball here. Okay? It's not a very good picture. So what do? You look first at this kernel, E, and you pick here a R net. So you pick a VIs by going from 1 to something such that the ball in E is covered by the union of the VIs plus rho of BE. And the number depends only on the dimension of this thing. And the dimension is 1 minus alpha times n. N is m, really, but okay? Because of the, I changed the role. I'm sorry, I didn't write it correctly. The dimension is 1 minus alpha to the n, and it's known what is the size of such net. It's like 3 over rho to the power of the dimension, 1 minus alpha to the n. This is where you gain here. Okay, you can do it like that. And then I have to finish. So then it's very easy to see that once you have that, it's very easy to see that the set that we are talking about, this BL1N intersection with Q minus 1 rho BF, is included. Not of the ball in this subspace, but just the M, really. Because here the size is rho, and here the sizes are rho, and, well, to be completely correct. And the number is small. Okay, the number is relatively small, 3 over rho to the 1 minus alpha n. And now you evaluate the volume of that by the volume of this thing times the number. And you just write it down, and it follows that if rho is small enough, you get that this probability is smaller.
First, I want to say one thing. What Wharton didn't talk was very easy to see. I don't care easy or not, but it's extremely interesting. Many people wait and see, so perhaps it's very easy, perhaps not so much. Anyway, what is dependence on sigma when sigma became full?
When alpha becomes... There is a problem with that. Even when alpha goes to 1, the sigma is still not full. It's like in Sauer-Schell lemma, you know, you get at most half of the set. This is the most you can expect for. There are, of course, all kinds of versions of other versions. Maybe you can use them, but I don't know exactly how.
Is it possible to replace the conclusion instead of finding one sigma which is larger than constant M, to cover it by a finite number of...
This is exactly the topic of this paper plus some 5 other papers of mostly of Bogen and Safrira. This is what they were trying to do. This is, I think, the last paper in this sequence. So, I mean, and this is why it was so hard to find it.
This is not known.
Bogen is not here, right? excuse me?
This is still not known.
Even for operators from L2 to L2, which is how is it called, this Cadison-Zinger problem.
Any more questions? Okay, if not, then thanks.